Hi, this is Chris Pels. In this video, we're going to learn how to integrate tracing in an ASP.NET application. So let's get started by creating a new website. And we'll call this Website VB. Now, to enable tracing in an ASP.NET website, you can do it one of two ways. You can either enable it for the entire website by putting some information in the web.config file, or you can enable it on a page-by-page basis. Let's start out by enabling it for our entire website. So we're going to go into web.config, get down to the system.web element, and we're going to add what's called a trace element, and we're going to do page output equals true. What this does is it will add the trace output to the bottom of our web page. We'll also set the enabled attribute to be true to enable tracing. And we're going to set the local only attribute to false, which means that the tracing information will be displayed to any web page. So with that small addition to our web.config, let's start up the default page, which has nothing on it at the moment, and just see what we get. You can see that this provides us with a whole bunch of information on our page. Starting at the top, we have some information on the request, including the ID of the session, date, time, encoding, the type of request, as well as a status code, which is a W3C value, this one indicating success. Then we see the trace information, which goes through all of the events that are fired on our page in order to render it, as well as over here on the right, we see this is the delta time from the previous step, so this would be where you get an indication of how long a particular step is taking in rendering your page. We then get a complete list of the controls that are on the page, or these are the web server controls that are used to render the page. We get their size, the view state size, as well as the control state size. We also would get the session and application state if that was available, get information on the cookies coming in the request as well as the cookies for the response. We then see the complete header collection here of all the header values, as well as we see some detail on the response headers, the form collection if values were there, query string, and then lastly we see all of the server variables that came inbound with this page. So that shows you how to do simple tracing on your entire website. Let's take a look at some of the other attributes that we can set here in the web.config file that control the tracing on the website as a whole. One of the other attributes is called the request limit, and this is an integer which indicates how many request should be stored on the server for tracing. By default it's 10. Let's make it 40 for our website. It can go up to a maximum of 10,000. Then the next attribute that we're going to look at is called most recent. And what most recent does is to indicate whether or not when the request limit is reached, should tracing stop, that would be false, or should tracing continue, which would be most recent equals true. And if it continues, what happens is that the request limit is kind of like a stack in that the most recent 40 requests would be stored on the server. So let's set this to true. And one of the other attributes that we can set here is called the trace mode, and as you can see it has two options, whether to sort the trace output by category or sort it by time. By default it's sort by time, and let's just stick with that for the moment. There is one more attribute called write to diagnostics trace, which we'll come back to in a few minutes after we've looked at a few other aspects of the tracing. So what I'd like to do now is to create two web pages just to demonstrate how you can control tracing on a single web page. So we'll create a new page, and the first one we'll call just tracing, and in that one we're going to turn tracing on, and we'll create a second page which we'll call no tracing, and in that one we're going to turn it off. Now because tracing is turned on in the web.config file, our tracing page will have tracing enabled. So what we want to do is here in the No Tracing page, let's turn off tracing, and there's an attribute of the page element called trace, and it's a Boolean. We set it to either true or false, indicating whether or not we want tracing to occur on this page, and since we want tracing to be off, we'll set this to false. One note is that the trace attribute in the page element takes precedence over what's in the web.config file. So in this case, our trace element on the no trace tracing page will turn off tracing. So let's just take a quick look at these two pages to show you what the difference is. First, we'll go to the tracing page and we'll view that in the browser. And this comes up, looks a lot like what we just saw on the default page. It includes all the tracing information. Now if we go to No Tracing and we view that one in the browser, you'll see we don't get the tracing information on this page. So that's how you turn tracing on and off in individual pages. Should note that this trace attribute in the page element just turns tracing on and off. The different parameters like the request limit, etc., can only be set in the web.config file for the application as a whole. So now let's look at how we might write some of our own custom trace messages. To do that, I'm going to put a few controls on our tracing page. And we're going to put a few link button controls, and the first one we're going to call a write link. So we'll give it that ID, we'll run at equals server, and the text of this one will be just write link. And we'll just copy that, and we'll put a second control on the page as well. And this one we're going to call a warning link. So we'll give that, and let me just change this. Now let's go to the code in the page behind, and we want to add a event for the page load. And in here we're going to say if is postback. Then we're going to do a select case request form. There we go. And we want to have the event target form variable. And this is just going to allow us to pick up both the warn link and the write link link buttons that we created on the page. So we'll say case write link. And we'll do case warn link. And then we'll just do a case else. Throw new argument exception, and we'll just say warning trace. And then we'll throw a new invalid operation exception here, and we'll just put a warning trace. And I see I put warning up here where we should have had write, so let's just put write trace on that one. And then let's just take this from here, and in the else case we'll just put general exception as a message there. And we're just putting some messages in here so we can differentiate where we're landing in these different places. Now what we want to do is to put this in a try catch block. So let's just take the code, put it up here in our try, and we want to first catch an argument exception. And then we want to catch an invalid operation exception in the second one. So then, in this first catch, which is connected to our write trace from the write link, so now what we want to do is down in the argument exception, which pertains to the write trace that we want to do. We're going to go trace.write, or rather, there we go, write. And we're going to pass three things into this method. The first is going to be a category. Let me just scroll down to the overload that we're going to use, which is number 3. So the category we'll call exception. And then our message, and this is a write trace. And then we want to actually pass the exception or error information. So now let's just take that one and copy it down here. But this time, rather than the write method, we're going to use the warn method. We use the same category of exception, and we'll just change this message to be warn trace, and we want to pass in the second exception information. Okay, let's start up this page and see what happens. Let me first put a breakpoint here on line 8 so we can watch that code being hit. We start up the page, first time through, postback is false, so we do not go through the select case statement. Page comes up, we get our trace information. Now let's click on one of our links. First let's click on the write link. Comes in, postback is true, steps in, the event target, form variable, hits the write link, throws the argument exception down here, it's caught. Now we're going to write out a trace message. Page comes up, and as you can see now in our trace information, we have a new item with the category of exception, and then we have the write trace message, which was our message, followed by the error information in the error object. So now we'll go back up. Let's just do the warning link as well. We'll see the same thing happens, post back true, over into the warn link, down to the exception, and now we're going to write a warning. Here's our page, and the difference you can see, we still have the category of exception, all of the appropriate warning information, our message and the error information, but warnings are in red, whereas the write method caused something that was in black. So if you have something important that you want to warn about, then you would use the warn method. So now what I want to do is to create a customers page that shows us a simple list of customers in a grid view, and then take a look at some of the additional tracing information that's available. So let's create a new page for the site, and as I said, we'll call this customers. And we'll just close out the other pages. Now what I want to put on this page, two things. Let's go to the design mode. And the first thing I would like to put on here is an XML data source. And the second thing is a grid view. And in the grid view, I'm just going to pick the XML data source as the data source for the grid view. Now let's go back into the source view. And let's just quickly set up a little bit of data for this page. What we're going to do is we're going to manually enter a little data in the data element of the XML data source. And we can put an XML structure right in here. So let's call this customers. And let's put a few customer elements. And we'll just put a few attributes. We'll put first name equals Joe, and last name equals Smith. And we'll just copy that. And we'll change a few. So we'll put John Doe in here. And we'll put Johnson. And we'll make that one Greg. And we'll put this to be Betty Hodges. And the last one we'll just make Jones, and we'll make that Linda. Then we're going to go down into our grid view. Let's just add a few columns here. And the first column will be a bound field. And the data field is going to be equal to first name. And the header text will just put first name. Just copy and paste that and make the other one the last name. And we'll be all done. And we will just put one more attribute. We'll put auto generate columns equals false. And let's just go over into the code behind. And in our page load event, let's just add a few little trace messages. So we'll put a trace.write. And we'll make this application page category, and the message will be loading page. And let's put a second one, and we'll also call this application page category, and we'll say finish loading page. So now let's make our customers page the start page. Let's fire it up and see what we get in our trace window. So we get the controls at the top of the page with our little grid listing the customer names. Then we get all our request information. And what's important to note here is now in our trace information, we have two write messages for the start and finish of the page loading. And we get an indication of how long that process takes. It's pretty quick since we're not doing much in there, but we're going to go back and change that in just a moment. And the other thing is to look down here in the control tree. And now that we have a little bit more robust control, you can start to see how useful this information can be. So here's our grid view, and you can start to see the rendering size of the grid view control, as well as how much or how many bytes it is taking up in the view state. So this can be very helpful when you have a more complex page to get an idea of what is taking up the space in the response of your page. That is, which pieces of your page take up the most space in your response object, as well as you get a perspective on how big your view state is and what is contributing to the size of the view state. So now let's go back and add a little bit more. What I'm going to do is to make a copy of our customer's page. And actually what I'm going to do is let me add a new page by a slightly different name, customer business object. And to save time, what I'm going to do is to take the code from our customer's page, and we're going to put that over in our new customer's business object page. And here's our load event. We'll put that over here as well. And let me just close the original customer's page so we don't inadvertently make a change. Now let's go into the page, and what I want to do this time is we're going to keep the XML data source, but we're going to take the customer information and we'll just copy it to the clipboard. We're going to delete it out of the XML data source control itself, and we're going to add a new file to our app data folder, an XML file, and we're going to call it customers. And we're going to paste in the customer XML information to that file, so you can probably guess what we're going to do here is we're going to load it from the file rather than have it directly in the data source. And now let's add a new class, and in this class we're going to call it customer. It just says it's going to add it to the app code folder. Okay, let's add a few methods in here, And the first one is called Get Customers, and it's going to take in a file name as a string, and it's going to return a string. And then also, let's just add a constructor method. And in the constructor method, we're going to do a trace write. And notice that we don't get the IntelliSense, so what we're missing here is that we're no longer working with the ASP.NET trace element, or I should say object. So what we need to do is to add an imports that does imports system.diagnostics, and now we'll have the trace class within the system diagnostics namespace, and we want to add a message called customer class is created. So that'll give us an indication when this class is created. Then in our get customers method, let's start out by having a message that says start getting customer data, and let's put that in a category called customer, and let's put one called end getting customer data, and we'll also put that in the category of customer. Now, what we want to do is we're going to create a variable as a system.xml.xml document equals to the new system xml.xml document, and then we're going to load the file name that's passed in, and then we're going to return the document's outer XML as a string. Now let's go back over to our customer business objects page. And in our page load, what we're going to do is we're going to dimension a new customer object instance. I'm going to take the XML data source 1, and we're going to set the data property on that equal to the customer.getCustomers method. And in there, we need to put a map path, and we need to set that equal to the app data / customers.xml. So now let's just make sure that the customer business object is our start page. Let's start it up and see what we get. And we do get the grid with the customer names coming out of the customer's XML file, but we're not getting our trace messages from our business object. So let's go back and look at what we have to do to integrate those messages with our other messages. Now the reason that we're not getting the messages from our customers.vb business object is because the trace object here in our page, as you can see, is part of system.web.traceContext. Whereas when we go over to our appCodeCustomer.vb, the trace class that we have here is part of system.diagnostics. So what we have to do is integrate this trace information from system.diagnostics to display on our web page tracing. In order to do that, we need to go back over to the web.config file and add a few things. First thing we're going to do is just ensure that all our error messages are being displayed. So we're going to say custom errors mode equals off. Go back up to the top, and this doesn't necessarily have to be at the top, but we're just going to put it here so you can see it clearly. We need to add a new section called system.diagnostics, and then in there we want to add a trace element, and inside the trace element we want to add the listeners element, and then inside there we want to add a listener, and we're going to give this the name web page trace listener, and the type you can get from the documentation on adding listeners, and that is, I'm going to paste it in here from the documentation, and then we just need to close off that element. Now on ASP.NET pages, you saw that the traces are displayed automatically. However, when we have system.diagnostic.trace messages, they're only displayed if the trace information is compiled into the application. So in order to do that, we need to add another entry. We need to add a section here after the system.diagnostics, and I've created this section ahead of time. I'm just going to copy it from the toolbox because it has a bunch of settings in it. Let me just paste that in. So it's an element by the name system.codedom compilers, and we're adding a compiler for Visual Basic. And so what this will do is use the compiler option of tracing equals true or trace equals true, and that will compile the trace information into our business object. So now if we view the page, you'll see that in addition to the ASP.NET tracing information, we now have the customer information in our trace log. Now, in addition to writing the system.diagnostics trace information to the ASP trace page, we can also do the reverse, and that is write the ASP trace information to the standard system.diagnostics output. In order to do that, there's two things that we have to do. The first is we need to add another attribute to our trace element in the system.wed element, and that is the write to diagnostics trace will set to true, and this will route the ASP information to the diagnostics trace. Then we need to add another listener here inside our system.diagnostics element, and again I've copied this from the documentation, so I'm just going to paste it into our web.config. And let me get that inside the listeners element. There we go. Let me reformat this so we can see this. Good. Now let's start up our web page, and we'll see the trace information that we saw previously. We'll close down the web page. Now we're going to refresh the website, and now we have an HDI trace log file here. And if we open that up, we don't find any information. And the reason for that is that the listener caches information and it didn't flush it out to our tracelog file. So what we need to do is to go back up here to our trace element, and we need to say autoflush equals true to flush that information out. And now if we open the log file after viewing the page again, you'll see we have the same trace information in the log file that we had on the ASP.NET web page. So this creates a more permanent record of the trace information. The other thing we could do is to create a custom listener that wrote the information out to a database file. One last thing I'd like to show you is called the Trace Viewer. And up to this point, we've been viewing trace information in the web page. Let me just browse this tracing page. And this is the type of page we've been getting up to this point. There's also something called the Trace Viewer, and if you run trace.axd in the website where you're doing the tracing, it'll bring up a page that looks like this. And what this does is lists the most recent traces that you've run or the pages that you've viewed with tracing. And then you can go over here on the right and view details, which is the individual data for any of the pages. So we've seen how to add tracing to the entire web application, as well as turn it on and off on individual pages. We then saw how to write both regular and warning messages using the trace object. And then we looked at how to add trace information to a custom business object using system.diagnostics, which is similar to but a different approach to tracing in an ASP.NET web page. And then lastly, we looked at how to integrate the trace information from system.diagnostics to the ASP web page trace information, and also write both the ASP and system.diagnostics trace information to a log file. I hope you'll find this information on how to put trace information in your ASP.NET web application useful. I encourage you to download the sample code that comes with this video. It's in both C# and Visual Basic. This is Chris Pels. Thank you for watching this video on implementing tracing in your ASP.NET web application.